them entered the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, as well as a thick cloud on the mountain, and a blast of a trumpet so loud that all the people who were in the camp trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. They took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended upon it in fire. The smoke went up like the smoke of a kiln, while the whole mountain shook violently. As the blast of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses would speak and God would answer him in thunder. When the Lord descended upon Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, the Lord summoned Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And then we're going to read from Exodus 20, 1 through 17. Then God spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I am the Lord your God. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or your female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor."
Friends, brothers and sisters in Christ, this morning we gather ourselves around God's fire once again. Like wanderers trying to find our way home, settling in around a campfire at the end of the day to catch our breath, rest our weary bones, to let all our cares float up like sparks into the atmosphere, to stare playfully at dancing flames, to let our minds roam with the God who is found even in the wilderness. We pause to warm ourselves around God's fire, and today to consider what it means to follow a God of wanderers. When I was about 6 years old, my dad was told by some of the elders in our congregation that they didn't want him as their pastor anymore. Years later, we learned that those sentiments had actually been pretty isolated to those few elders, but at the time, my dad felt like he had no option but to leave. To me, too young to understand the details, but old enough to feel a lot of confusion, sadness, and anger about it, this was when my family went from one with deep, deep roots in a particular church, in our church, to a family of wanderers. For the first time, for the first little while afterwards, my dad found work doing construction. And while I don't remember where we were going to church in those months, if we were even going to church at all, I do remember him taking me to his new work site one day. And while my dad certainly knows his way around a hammer and a saw, I remember feeling like I was watching him do something strange and out of character. Like both of us had wandered into a place where we were welcome for the time being, but where we didn't quite belong. It's a feeling that I soon learned that I was going to feel in church from then on, too. It's a feeling that followed me to the Mennonite church an hour away from us, where my dad eventually found a job as an interim pastor. For those 2 years, early each Sunday, while no one had even begun to arrive at the Mennonite church directly across the street from our house, we packed into our car and drove an hour to our new church. I quickly made friends with the kids who were my age in that church, but my sense of who I was in church was permanently altered. I was the son of the pastor, which meant I was a member of the one expendable family, which meant I should never forget who I was, a wanderer who was welcome for the time being, but one who never fully belonged. Even when my dad next became pastor of the congregation that he would serve until he retired, that he still goes to now, I'd been stamped with this identity. Nearly all the other kids in my Sunday school class had been there since the day they were born. Nearly all of them were cousins with one another and related to everyone else in the congregation. None of them seemed to go home wondering if their family might be asked to leave someday. In this place that literally had a sign out front that said, "Everybody welcome," I felt like I knew better. My family was welcome, for now. But I knew we were still wanderers. It was only years later that I learned that my childhood as a church wanderer gave me a special place in God's story. In Sunday school, whenever I'd heard about the Israelites' time wandering around in the desert, I always assumed that wandering is just something one endures. But the whole point of the story was that the Israelites belonged in that promised land, but in order to get there, they had to wander around first. But if we're paying attention to what the Bible really says, well, the Bible doesn't actually see it that way. In fact, God meets God's people in the wilderness while they're wandering. And God keeps showing up. And this isn't just in like a vague, touchy-feely, I think I felt God's presence in the breeze kind of way. God is present and meeting them in terrifyingly tangible ways. In the Exodus story, first, God arrives as a cloud of smoke, leading them by day, and a pillar of fire sticking with them at night. Then, with a bolt of lightning accompanied by thunder and a deafening trumpet blast, God shoots down onto Mount Sinai in a burning flame, smoking everything up like a kiln until the entire mountain is engulfed in flames. With years and years of wandering still ahead of them, God's people are learning that God is not just saying, "Meet you guys in the promised land." God seems to want to spend a lot of hands-on time with them while they're wandering. We see that God is a God of wanderers, too. When I look back at all those years when I felt like I was a church wanderer, I see that too. When I look back at all those years when I felt like a church wanderer, I realized that given my family's history of rejection, I often felt a fair amount of terrifying distrust for anyone in my church who seemed disingenuous or judgmental. But God kept meeting me in the midst of that. God engulfed my family through these experiences so that even when church felt unsafe for us, we continued to hold long and loving family conversations about our deepest faith questions and convictions at home. To this day, I know few others who talk as intimately about faith around the supper table as I can with my parents. Even if I wasn't sure about God meeting me at church, God met me at that dinner table over and over. And God met me through other key adults in the church who embraced my wounded, wandering spirit. When I acted out on my hurts through outrageous behaviors in Sunday school and youth group, these rare, precious, God-sent adults in my life recognized that what I needed most from them was not for them to fight me, but to show me that they were on this desert road with me, to show me that they were wanderers too. These were the adults who somehow knew that beneath my veneer of confidence and cynicism, I desperately needed my outrageous jokes to be met by laughter, not scowls, my outrageous questions to be validated, not banished, and my stubbornness to be funneled towards leadership opportunities, not stamped out. But ultimately, something even more important happened through this. Ultimately, these and those other churchgoers even began to admit to me as I got older that they shared my hurts, fears, and questions too. So eventually, I learned that in church, I had a lot of company. That in fact, nearly all of us sometimes, even often, feel like I felt in church. That the church might actually be full of fellow wanderers. When you hear someone say that they've been in a church for years and years, but for some reason they still feel like everybody looks at them like they're new to the church, I recognize a fellow wanderer. When I hear someone say, I've been super involved here for years, but I still feel like I'm supposed to do something else to prove that I'm Mennonite enough, I recognize a fellow wanderer. When I hear someone say, if people knew how my kids are living, I'm not sure they'd still think my family was any good, I recognize a fellow wanderer. When I hear someone say, if people actually knew what I all did before I started coming here, they probably would never look at me the same, I recognize a fellow wanderer. When I hear someone say, if people actually knew what my doubts and questions are, they probably wouldn't want me here, I recognize a fellow wanderer. When I hear any one of 100 other fears we all have about being fully accepted at church, if everyone knew the truth about us, I recognize an entire tribe of wanderers walking this desert with me, looking for God, and waiting to reach their promised land, fully knowing that they belong. Because let's be honest, this is so, so many of us. Almost none of us feel like we fit that mythical, perfect mold that we keep telling ourselves a perfect Christian fits. The church is a weird place like that. We all come here every week telling ourselves that whatever our heaviest, ugliest baggage is, it won't fit on the official church baggage rack, so we better keep wandering around with it. Maybe we'll stash it under the pew during the service and then sneak out with it after the last song, hoping nobody noticed. And we assume that we're the only ones doing it. When actually, it turns out that we're probably all doing the same thing. And this is where the other part of today's story comes into things. Though we often feel like personal failures because of the doubts and insecurities that leave us feeling like wanderers, it's actually when we're wandering together that we have the greatest opportunity to actually learn how to live together. I mean, it's when the people of God were all wandering together that God delivered God's most famous guidelines for community living, what we today call the Ten Commandments. Today's story occurs right as the people have traveled from Egypt to Mount Sinai. They've started getting used to desert living, but the next leg of the journey, the one after this, is where it's truly going to get tough. It's the part where the people of God go from travelers through the desert to wanderers in the desert. So far, they've pretty much traveled straight from Egypt to Mount Sinai, their first destination, and the second leg of their journey should be pretty easy from there. The Promised Land, Canaan, is actually a pretty short journey from Mount Sinai, but they're about to take 40 years to get from here to here. They're going to walk in circles, make left turns where they should be making right turns. They're going to do some serious wandering. And if we're reading quickly, we assume this is just a punishment, nothing more. But if we're reading closely and putting ourselves in their shoes, we realize that this wandering is also creating an incredible opportunity. There's a reason why God rolls out the Ten Commandments and then pretty much 20 more chapters of guidelines for them right now when they're becoming wanderers. Because the fact that they are going to be stuck wandering in the desert for that long is opening up a huge learning opportunity for them. They're going to be able to learn lessons that they will have a very hard time learning when they get to the comforts of the Promised Land. I mean, think about it. It's one thing to tell people in a land with ample resources and space, remember to rest one day a week. Honor your father and mother. Don't lie to each other. Don't steal each other's spouses or property. But the people living with ample resources and space aren't going to learn that message very easily. When you have lots of resources and lots of space, it's easy to convince yourself that you can escape the consequences of violating community. You could sneak in a seventh day of work and not immediately become overcome with exhaustion. You can disrespect your neighbors, even your own parents. You can lie and steal and take up with your neighbor's husband or wife. Just do it and then make a run for it. There are lots of places to go, and there's more than enough to sustain you wherever you go. Of course, the consequences for violating your community will eventually catch up with you anywhere. But when you have plenty of space to run and hide in, and ample resources to support you wherever you go, it's easy to keep those consequences at bay for a long time. Long enough that you begin to convince yourself that you can outrun them. Not when you're wandering in the desert. If you need to learn to treat your neighbor with love and respect, to rely on their honesty and integrity, and to have to have them rely on yours while wandering in the desert is the way to learn it. In the desert, if you refuse to take a Sabbath rest, you may well die of exhaustion. If you lie and steal and disrespect, the consequences are immediate. There's no avoiding the one you've stolen from, because there's no surviving on your own for very long in the desert. You need each other's support and collaboration and ingenuity to survive. There's no individualism in the desert. In the desert, there's either a community of mutual support or, as the people of God figured out the hard way from time to time, there's death. When you're wandering in the desert, you either wander together or you literally die. You know, for all the things said about the Ten Commandments, and there's plenty, there's actually a very simple truth about them. Don't lie may seem like it's only one of the commandments, but it's also kind of all 10 of them. Time and again, every commandment is basically this: live honestly. Be honest in the way you talk about God by not using the Lord's name in vain. Be honest about your own limitations and about your reliance on God by resting on the Sabbath. Be honest about where you came from by honoring your mother and father. Be honest with others in every way. Don't steal. Don't sleep with others' partners. Don't bear false witness. Don't murder. Don't lust after stuff that isn't yours anyway. At the core of it is this: if we're all a bunch of wanderers, we're going to have to survive by relying on one another and God. We've got to come together, and we've got to stick together. And the key to coming together and sticking together is this: live honestly with one another. And I don't just mean let's not be jealous of each other's nice cars or take each other's donkeys or iPhones or kill each other and stuff. I mean, let's live the positive flip side of all this, which is do live in deeply honest ways with one another. And when we think of the things that leave so many of us feeling like lonely wanderers these days, this means asking each other in utter sincerity about that very thing. Why do you sometimes feel like a wanderer in your own church? What do you need to get off your chest that you're afraid you're not allowed to talk about here? It means asking that question of even the person whose answer you already know will make you squirm the most. It means truly listening in love, even when their answer feels threatening to you. It means taking the leap of faith of sharing honestly and vulnerably too. It means recognizing that it's not just that ancient desert that was full of wanderers, but that any good church will be full of them too. Full of people like me and you. And like wanderers in the desert, churches face this truth. If you want to survive and even thrive and have a future, you're going to have to stick together. And just as dishonesty corrodes our bonds, it's real honesty, especially honesty about the very things that threaten to make us each feel like lonely wanderers, that really superglues us together. So this week, as you pray for our congregation, ask God to show you if there's anything on your heart that might be preventing you from feeling like you fully belong here. In what ways do you feel like a wanderer out there on your own? And how might you transform that feeling into an opportunity to really superglue your bond to other people here? How is God inviting you to be more honest with all these wanderers here? And how might you be on the other end of helping someone to go from being a lonely wanderer to joining an entire tribe of wanderers too? When the desert feels empty, when the promised land feels so far away that you can't believe you could ever actually get there, when you feel like the baggage you carry is too ugly or heavy for anyone else to ever want to touch it, may you look up to see a God so terrifyingly in love with us that that love can fall from heaven like fire, smoke like a kiln, cover an entire mountain. And in that love, may you hear the call of God saying, "You are not alone. Go, my wandering ones, and wander together. Share your burdens. Embrace the deep honesty of friendship and live."